prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, November 7th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Hey, hey, hey. We saw gold higher today.
Yeah, no, what happened?
I don't know, as you
mentioned. And on a Friday, we're going to end this week on a happy note.
Well, we'll take this happy note as we can get them, right? You know, maybe somebody is just a little, when is it, you know, when you mess up your numbers? Or,
yeah, I understand. I think somebody punched a negative sign in when they meant to hit a positive sign or something.
I know.
Hard to understand what they've done here, but they've done it, so
let's we'll not take it.
Gift horse in the mouth.
Yes, we'll take it. And aftermarket trading on the New York spot price, you're looking at gold right now moving up again in this last half-hour trade, up 33 today at 11.75. You also see silver the same thing, up 32 cents at 15.85. Platinum was up $22 at 12.22. And palladium, 777, up $24. USDX today took a beating, but really not that bad in order to reflect the higher price in gold. And yesterday we saw strength in the dollar and gold still maintained a higher level, small as it might be. It was still to the green side, to the upside, and which I thought was a very good sign, particularly since you saw the dollar in the index be so strong yesterday, and it proved today that there was a lot of strength at that other underlying number and the pressure on the dollar today. So U.S. crude oil today is up 55 at 78.46, and the paper markets today, after they hit all their, I guess, new highs, new records, and the Dow was up 19 points at 17,573. The NASDAQ was down almost 6 points at 46.32. The S&P basically unchanged at 2,031. And the 10-year yield down 0.06 at 2.31%. Right before getting ready to do the program, I was watching a little bit of CNBC as I was looking at some closing numbers coming from there. And they had Gartman on there, Dennis Gartman. And yeah, I'm not... You know, he's so wishy-washy, and, you know, he changes his opinion on the markets as the market changes, so it's just so he's usually, you know, I don't know. But, you know, they have him on, you know, the Liars program anyway. And now he was saying that all the professionals are wrong, because all the professionals were expecting the markets to continue, the paper markets to continue to go lower. And he says that those folks that are hanging in there that aren't changing or doing anything to their portfolios, the common investor, they're doing quite well. And I'm thinking to myself, if there is ever a time to sell after that comment, it pretty much just, I think that was his way of saying it, if anybody cared to pay attention to what he was saying. And usually whenever you have the general populace that's in there and not moving, that's when they're ready to get hammered. Just an interesting note. And we also had the job report come out today. Employers added a solid 214,000 jobs in October, extending the steadiest pace of job growth in nearly 20 years. Really? Does it seem that way to you?
Yeah, really. That's what's really going on.
Really? In addition, a combined 31,000 more jobs were added in August and September than the government had previously estimated. Wish I could do my job that way. And employers have now added...
You do sales that way. You can just sit back and say,
hey, whoops.
How many points did you say? Well, let me...
That's what I meant, but... employers have now added at least 200,000 jobs for 9 straight months, the longest such stretch since 1995.
Ooh.
The burst of hiring lowered the unemployment rate to 5.8% from 5.9%, and it is the lowest rate since July of 2008.
It's a shame this report didn't come out on Monday.
Oh.
Because it swung the election.
Maybe.
Tuesday, everybody would say, yay, happy days are here again. Let's vote for Obama and the Democrats.
Well, this is, at the same time, the hourly pay. It only rose slightly last month. And, of course, this is what the people are so upset. The average hourly pay rose 3 cents in October to 24.
3 cents?
3 cents.
Whoa, where will we spend it all?
Hey, it's just 2% above the average wage 12 months earlier. And that's barely ahead, of course, of inflation. And, of course,
it's
never
barely ahead of official inflation.
Yes.
Of course, if you buy groceries, for example, you're going to go down to the grocery store and you're going to find that a 2 or 3% increase in wages isn't going to amount to diddly compared to what you were able to buy a year ago at the grocery store.
And it just makes you wonder. You have Europe that is on the brink of its third recession. You have both China, their economies, their growth has weakened. Of course, also Japan. And if the U.S. consumers are, you know, at all these great numbers and jobs and working as 2008, you'd think no one's growth would be in decline. But, you know, just interesting. And, of course, the job gains were mainly lower paying industries. They have posted the most or the biggest increases. And of course, we know that. That's the problem. These jobs that are available certainly aren't.
They're not high paying.
They're not high paying.
I saw a report the other day where a significant proportion of the jobs that government reports are merely guesses.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really have evidence on it. They just say, well, I think we got another 100,000 jobs here, so we'll add that in too. The truth of the matter is they can probably only account for about half of the jobs they're reporting as an increase. They say we had 200,000. It may be that there's 100,000 jobs. There's another 100,000 or thereabouts that are simply guesstimated. And maybe we got them and maybe we didn't. Nobody really knows.
We talked about this before, Al, and I'm going to bring it up again because it's disturbing, because it's so close. If these numbers are true, if this report is true, and will we actually see this impact in 10 years? But this report, it was done by a consulting firm, CBRE, and a China-based Genesis. It's a firm in China. And they're a property developer, and they interviewed 220 experts, business leaders, and young people from Asia, Europe, and North America. And what this report is talks about how the workplace will operate over the next 15 years, making nearly 50% of occupations existing today redundant by 2025. Artificial intelligence will transform businesses and the work that people do. We've talked about that before. Process work, customer work, and vast swaths of the middle management will simply disappear. Nearly 50% of the occupations today will no longer exist in 2025. New jobs will require creative intelligence, social and emotional intelligence, and ability to leverage artificial intelligence. Those jobs will be immensely more fulfilling than today's jobs. The workplaces with rows of desks will be completely redundant, and not because they are not fit for purpose, but because that purpose no longer exists. Well, in 15 years, there will be a revolution in how we work, and a corresponding revolution will necessarily take place on how we plan and think about workplaces. And I mean, I think to myself, you're going to have this type of change in the workplace in 10 years. What's the rest of society going to look like? I mean, the other changes that have to happen to allow this to happen.
Well, one of the things that's going to happen is your description of people who will have jobs. They're going to need creative intelligence and emotional intelligence and blah, blah, blah. That means probably about 95% of the people aren't going to have a job.
No.
That's the implication. Now what? We're going to have, who knows, maybe 10% of the population. If this is correct, it may be that 10% or less of the public will have jobs. Now, what are the other 90% going to do? We're all going to be on some kind of welfare, right? Or those of us who don't have jobs, you're going to be on some kind of welfare, or you're going to be on some kind of rioting business where you're trying to burn your own city to the ground or whatever. I don't know what's going to happen, but this is going to be strange, and it will inevitably mean that 90% of the people who don't have jobs have an equality of income. Right? You're not going to be able to make more. You're not going to be able to work harder and get more money per se. How do you get ahead? You don't get ahead. You have the same as everyone else has. How are they going to divide that up? Are they going to allow the top 1% to take 80-90% of the profits and the bottom 90% to take next to nothing, live on gruel? What do they intend to do here? But this is certainly difficult, extraordinary, unprecedented problem. And the simple solution to this problem is to exterminate a lot of people. Now, we can either figure out how to divide the money in a way that's tolerable to the 90% who don't have jobs, and then they won't have to do anything but go out and just fornicate and make more babies, or find a way to reduce the population dramatically, and the rich can keep it all for themselves, whatever that is. I don't even know. The whole thing becomes strange, and it does appear you may not have to work for a living, or at least most people. It may be that the welfare society that we see growing right now, and whether we may object to, may be that that's the way of the future. But how long can it sustain itself? And how long can it survive? What happens to people who don't have jobs? I mean, most people need a job to give them some semblance of, you know, self-esteem. We need a job. It may not be an absolute need, but it's pretty close. In the past, it used to be that men who didn't have jobs after they retired, they usually died within a year or two. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's still true to any significant extent today, but it was 30 years ago. What happens if people never have jobs?
What do they do for self-esteem? What do they do to feel good about themselves? And they have the same car as everyone else has, and the same apartment, and the same number of square feet and the rest of it. It's just human nature to want more. And we're maybe headed to a time when you can't get more. You may have to do with less. Strange, very strange circumstances.
You know what's so bizarre about this is the time frame, 2025. Now, if this report was dated 2050.
They actually mean 2020. They're saying 2025. They mean 2020, maybe even 2018. We're going to watch this. This may happen a little quicker than what they're projecting.
Or are they projecting this? This is just how they want it to be and how they're, but you know, you have a China-based company that they have to deal with their population. You know, how is their population going to work? How are those people going to be trained by the government? Got
to
remember, the communist nation.
To do what? Trained to do what? They're going to be replaced.
Yes.
They don't even need to be trained to push the buttons on the computer.
True.
They're going to have a computer that pushes its own buttons, and the rest of us can just stand around and watch. Wow. You know, I mean, we're going to be reduced to the status of a bunch of monkeys watching machines.
But are we really that advanced? I saw a comment today that was kind of funny, and if I can't quote it properly, but it goes along the lines of they have vehicles that can basically park themselves,
mm-hmm.
but yet you have to wave your hand under a paper towel dispenser 40 times for it to work. So they can't get something like that so simple to work, but yet they can have a car park itself. So it's like, okay, fax machines. I mean, how, you know, it's the same fax machine for 100 years. So, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, you know.
Well, the other thing is, how do they make the transition? This is all very interesting.
Yes.
We can make a prediction that something's going to happen in 10, 11 years. Okay, interesting. And the prediction may be solid and valid, but how do we get from here to there?
That's what I was talking
Somewhere
about, the social
along
change.
The line, we have to make dramatic. We aren't going to just one day flip a light switch and 90% of us aren't going to have jobs. It's going to be 10% don't have jobs, and then 20% don't have jobs, and then 30% don't have jobs, and 40%. And how do we persuade the people who do have jobs to put up enough money to pay for the people who don't have jobs? This is going to be an extraordinary transition, and I can't imagine that it's going to flow smoothly. And even if you can sit back and say, well, it'll all work out here in the United States. Well, maybe it'll work out in the United States. But what's going to happen in India? What's going to happen in China? What's going to happen in Africa and places that are less developed where they find technologies and machines that essentially replace people that are barely doing anything other than pulling a rickshaw right now? What are these people going to do?
Here,
this is something strange. This is strange and dangerous. And I don't see how we're going to make an easy transition from where we are to where they predict. And I'm not convinced that the prediction is necessarily correct, but it's interesting, and it does point in a direction that's probably accurate in general terms.
So here's one date. By 2030, a majority of real estate transactions may be made online. Most of them will, most of them will be made using real-time marketplaces. So there goes your whole real estate industry. If you can buy a house, if you can rent an apartment, a business space, an office online, what the heck do you need real estate agents for?
Well, you won't need them.
You won't.
On top of that, it's like competition on the internet right now is bloodthirsty.
Mm-hmm.
People can go up there. You can go up there in a matter of minutes and find a half a dozen or 10 different outlets for a particular product you're looking for. And you can compare the prices, and the one you're likely to buy is the lowest. And it might be only 5 cents lower than it is some other place, but you know, 5 cents is 5 cents. It means that the net effect of the internet and buying on the internet is deflationary. It will drive profits down. It drives profits down, prices down, profits down, tax revenues go down. How, you know, all of it just points to an unstable world. And if that it starts with real estate, it'll be the same thing. We can start with stocks. How about stocks? Everybody should buy stocks and trade on the internet. What happens to prices? They have to go down almost inevitably, especially with something like real estate. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back to celebrate gold's good fortune today and to wonder what our fortune is going to be over the course of the next 10, 20 years. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. All your gold and silver coin needs. What you got, Melody?
Hey, since the big news story this week are the silver eagles in short supply because the U.S. Mint is unable to keep up with demand because they were off busy making the 2015s, and then demand all of a sudden with the drop in silver took over, and we had the huge month last month. They ran out of 2014 silver eagles, and they can't release the 2015s, so they're hurrying to make up the back orders for 2014. So we have 1 ounce silver eagles 2014s. We have Morgan silver dollars pre 1921s, beautiful coins, for a total package, $940 for both. So you get 40 coins, 20 silver eagles, and 20 Morgan silver dollars. It includes your shipping costs for $940. Give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. And, of course, visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. We have a caller, Alfred.
We do?
We do.
Jim from West Virginia?
We do.
Aha! What's up, Jim?
You know, sometimes weeks go by and I have nothing to contribute and no questions to ask, but recently you guys have been hitting on a few of them. I've spoken with people who've gone through these regime changes in other countries, and what happens is towards the end of one regime, people run off the land into the cities, and then they do this, that, and the other, with the commerce, what have you, trade, body, body, yah, yah, like Argentina. But then when the whole system comes apart, their currency goes to pieces, the commodities cost a lot, food costs a lot, and there is almost invariably some form of land reform so people can get back onto the land to produce, you know, fuel, fiber, materials, tools, what have you. Because this thing goes kaflooey, however it happens, flash crash, slow grind, bloody be not so bloody, I don't know. But because so many commodities, resources will go up so much in price because of the dead, dying dollar, so-called dollar, there will be a great deal more opportunity in agriculture, for instance. Like after Cuba, after the Soviet Union went down, and the people in Cuba were sitting there, all the yuckety mucks in Havana were the hot stuffs. Until the Soviet Union went down, all of a sudden, oopsie, then food prices went up like crazy, and then the farmers kind of took about five notches up in importance. So there will be, we'll won't be able to buy cheap foreign goods. People going to say, let's fix this gizmo here rather than trying to buy a new one. Manufacturing will shut up. The biggest concern I have, to be honest with you, is where are we going to get the capital to get back into mining and manufacturing and such as that. Now, I've heard casual numbers. I've never looked into this. Something like a fourth of the Midwestern land is in food production. The rest of it's been taken out of production by people who don't want it in production or taken over by corporate farming. But there will be, if a bag of beans goes from $1.50 to $5, people will be poking beans into their flower gardens. But there will be a shift because certain things will become expensive, and therefore it'll be very important that somebody goes into that business.
So it'll be important. You'll see women, for example, who would normally say, "I'm married to a systems analyst, and he makes a lot of money." They're going to be bragging, "I'm married to a ditch digger, or perhaps a plumber, or a roofer who can't be replaced by a computer." There are some things that can't be replaced, but if you're sitting at a desk, your days are numbered.
Okay, I'll give you an example. There's a lady I know who was a wonderful baker. Now, she got in a lot of trouble because of some stupid bureaucrat came down on her. But she's sitting there saying, you know what, when this whole system comes apart, I'm going to supply this whole dang town with bread. But there are it'll turn into a village economy in many ways. It will become much more rural in nature. There is land here where I am in the middle of the woods in Roane County, West Virginia, and I have seen photographs in the 1930s taken from the high spot around here, and it was like a panoramic view all the way around a circle, a sequence of photographs. And you saw one little patch of trees. I can't remember in which direction. Now when you go up to old Nobby or old Peachy, the nicknames we gave those two, or hilltops, whatever, you see your trees. And whereas people used to run like 50 and 60 cattle over however many acres here, they're going to be running a lot of cattle here, for instance. There will be a big shift, but as the prices go up on certain things, that's going to spring opportunity for those who take advantage of it.
Well, it's always been that way.
Sir?
It's always been that way. I mean, if there's opportunity any place you look, ultimately, even in the darkest, fascist regimes, If you're capable of taking advantage of that opportunity, it may be a little bit dangerous, a little risky, but if you can pull it off, you can, you know, become rich and dangerous, perhaps. But it's not going to be an opportunity for the average man. I mean, anybody can seize that opportunity, but it's not going to be the kind of opportunity that favors a strong middle class. We'll have opportunity at the top end. If you can jump in and take advantage, you can get rich. But 90% of the people are going to remain in a very humble circumstance, I suspect.
Very humble, but we'll have to work our way out of it. For instance, there were parts of Germany, the farming areas, rural areas, and they barely knew war was really going on, except that all of a sudden they got a whole lot more money for their food. So there will be pockets of growth, and the rise of the middle class. The most important thing about producing wealth is that you have tools, whether it's a mattock to dig a ditch with rather than your bare hands.
No, it's not just that you have tools, it's that you own tools.
Exactly.
If you want to be in business, you must own the means of production. Marx pointed that out relative to the whole society, but where it really goes, if you personally want to make money, if you don't own tools, you're at best an employee. If you do own tools, you can be self-employed. You can even be an employer, and that's where the money is.
So it's going to start at the bottom, and we're going to have to build up again to develop the mining and the manufacturing, agriculture, everything. But there will be opportunities for those who can see it. So if you have time on your hands and you don't know anything about farming, learn. But at any rate, I'll quit hogging so much airtime. But you guys have been hitting on some topics that I thought that I should contribute to.
An infinite number of talk show hosts on an infinite number of radio programs, and eventually look what you get, a copy of Shakespeare.
Well, folks, as I said before, you do great. Keep focus on the economics, politics is simply rhetoric to obscure economic reality. The real action goes on with the bucks, folks. Catch you later.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. Follow the money.
Yep, follow the yellow brick road.
All right.
I got an article here from Reuters. The IMF, U.S. encourage ECB, Japan monetary stimulus. They're talking about the European Central Bank and the Japanese Central Bank, and both Europe and Japan are in the process of inflating their currency. And this article is saying the International Monetary Fund and the United States, by United States, they are talking about Janet Yellen at the U.S. Federal Reserve, they are encouraging the European Central Bank and Japan to engage in monetary stimulus. Now, this surprises me, all right? Because these people obviously know something I don't know, or they are ignoring something I do know. And what I'm getting to is this. You look at the U.S. dollar index. It's like a teeter-totter. And on one side, we have the United States dollar. On the other side of the teeter-totter, we have the euro, which makes up 57% of the U.S. dollar index. The Japanese yen makes up 14%. Great British pound, 12%. Canadian dollar is 9%. Swedish krona, 4%. Swiss franc, 4%. The heavyweights, got the United States on one side of the teeter-totter. We have these other six countries on the other side. These six countries, their currency effectively moves in opposite directions from the United States. It is the nature of the U.S. dollar index to function as a teeter-totter. And therefore, when the euro, for example, becomes inflated and less valuable, this causes the dollar to actually rise in value. It causes inflation in Europe. Works the teeter-totter where the currency in Europe is becoming less valuable, and the result is the currency in the United States becomes more valuable. When the currency in Japan becomes less valuable. It goes into inflation. The currency in the United States goes into deflation. Now, this is consistent with what we're seeing in terms of prices in this country. Dollar is becoming more valuable. Prices for commodities like crude oil, gold, and silver and so on are falling. The dollar is becoming more valuable while the currencies in the European Central that are being issued and inflated by the European Central Bank and also Japan are becoming less valuable. Teeter-totter effect. They go down, we go up. And when I see evidence that the International Monetary Fund, that doesn't surprise me, but it says Janet Yellen is in on this. She says U.S. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen said central banks need to be prepared to employ all available tools, including unconventional policies to support economic growth and reach their inflation targets, especially where governments have withdrawn fiscal stimulus policies to help recovery. She's saying the banks are going to have to step in, especially where the governments can't do any more. The object is to reach inflation targets. But if we are going to encourage Europe to inflate, and we are going to encourage Japan to inflate, on that teeter-totter, as those currencies become worth less, the dollar must become worth more. When the dollar slides into deflation, it is a hallmark of economic depression. If they're going to inflate the currency in Europe, if they're going to inflate the currency in Japan, and they claim they're doing an extraordinary job in Japan, and Europe is likely to follow, it means the dollar is going to deflate. It's going to push this country deeper into a depression. That's the implication, and that's why it is strange and bewildering for me to hear that the International Monetary Fund and Janet Yellen at the Federal Reserve are saying, yay, go ahead and inflate the euro and inflate the Japanese yen, and everything's going to work out fine in this country. To my perspective, their willingness to encourage the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan to inflate their Japanese and euro currencies, that's contrary to the best interests of this country. Our economy is going to be driven down and down and down until somebody puts an end to deflation. And some people, you know, we sit back and we talk about, oh my gosh, we have gone without even imagining that deflation was possible, or the threat of deflation was, it was triviality. Nobody thought about it. But all of quantitative easing, the Federal Reserve's production of $4 trillion in $4 trillion fiat dollars that were supposed to have been dispersed into our economy, they weren't, but they still printed all those dollars. Why did they do it? They did it because they were scared to death of deflation that would follow an economic recession, and especially a depression, starting in 2008. Quantitative easing is all about preventing deflation. That's what it's been about. Nobody said the word. Nobody, or virtually no one said the word. Nobody said, oh, quantitative easing is intended to stop deflation. But that's what it's really been for the past 6 years. And we are now at a point where we can look around and say to ourselves, gee, did quantitative easing work? Because we are seeing evidence of deflation. Nobody even talked about deflation a year ago. And right now, it's one of the primary subjects and for people that are dealing with economics. It implies that quantitative easing failed. They printed $4 trillion and they still couldn't get this economy to get into serious inflation, which is an antidote for deflation. They hate deflation, right? Deflation is good for creditors. It's terrible for borrowers because you have to pay off your debts in more expensive dollars. Inflation is great for borrowers, bad for creditors, because you can pay off your debts with cheaper dollars. The government is the biggest debtor in the world. It has a natural tendency to want inflation, and they have done just that for the past 80 years.
generally for the full 80 years, there's been exceptions when they got out of control or whatever, but they have pushed inflation. This is why we see reports the dollar's worth less than a nickel compared to what was back when. The government wants inflation. Why? So it can pay off its debts with cheaper dollars. If they get into deflation, it pushes us toward a depression. It pushes us toward a moment when the government has to admit we can't pay the debt. Once we can't pay the debt, the dollar dies. And here we are facing deflation, and Janet Yellen is encouraging this by telling the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan to go ahead and inflate all you want. We live in strange and bewildering times. Let's take a break for some more commercial announcements, and we will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adesk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. And while we were during the break, Melody pointed out that Janet Yellen said central banks need to be prepared to avoid all available tools, including unconventional policies, to support economic growth and reach their inflation targets, especially where governments have withdrawn fiscal stimulus policies to help recovery. Janet Yellen is implicitly supporting the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan and their effort to inflate their currencies, but her statement is general enough where it also implies that the United States, the U.S. Federal Reserve, the Central Bank of the United States, should also be prepared to inflate or to use unconventional policies to support economic growth. Well, she's opening the door and she's saying, we need to be able to inflate the currency also. All right. Well, we've been trying that to some extent since 2008, and it hasn't really worked very well. And given that the real purpose of quantitative easing was to stop deflation, that was the real purpose. They said, oh my gosh, we're in a great recession, could be a depression, whole system might collapse, we've got to stop deflation.
That was the reason behind increasing the monetary supply, the money supply, by printing an extra $4 trillion fiat dollars. Stop deflation. Didn't say deflation, but that was the motivating point. Well, what if they don't? The United States has shut down on that. We've tapered our efforts to inflate the currency, or the Federal Reserve has, and they've shut down their process of buying bonds. Gone from $85 billion a month, now it's been down to zero a month that they're paying the government to buy their bonds. This is evidence that the Federal Reserve is allowing deflation in this country. And if they don't move quickly, and she's saying, okay, everybody gets to inflate. Well, yeah, that's great. Everybody gets to inflate. Nice theory. But what does that necessarily mean for the price of gold? If everybody inflates, okay, the Europe does, Japan does, every one of the nations involved in the U.S. dollar index, we do. What's that necessarily mean? Price of gold has to go up, 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 and up. All right? On the other hand, what if they allow deflation to take place? What if the United States says, enough, we're not going to try to inflate the currency anymore. Can't do it. Doesn't work. Can't do it. Don't have the resources to do it. It's evidence that they have decided to pull the plug on the economy and simply say, psh, we're going to have a depression. And that's too bad for all those saps out there in TV land. All right, all those chumps, otherwise known as taxpayers, it's going to be a very difficult time. But it may be the only way that we can perhaps correct the fundamental problems in this economy, including wiping out the national debt. You know, again, deflation favors creditors because you have to pay your debts with more valuable dollars. Debtors have to pay their debts with more valuable dollars. You loan $1,000 to someone borrows $1,000 from me during a period of deflation. By the time he pays that $1,000 back, the purchasing power of that $1,000 might rise to $1,500. He's still going to pay me just $1,000. He borrowed $1,000, he's going to pay $1,000. But the purchasing power of the $1,000 he borrowed may grow during a period of deflation up to $1,500 in purchasing power. It means that the creditor is enriched by deflation and the borrower is impoverished by deflation. The government's the biggest borrower in the world. It can't, however much trouble it has paying the national debt right now, will only be increased and aggravated by an era of deflation. I look at this. You know, I've got another article here from David Schechtman, and he says smart money knows where this is headed, and he makes a number of comments that are worth of interest. He says things are really spiraling out of control, and I agree with that. Strange things are happening. Bewildering things are happening. Our government seems to be, for the moment, seems to be allowing deflation to take place. The U.S. dollar has gained 11%. It was 79 back in May of this year, 6 months ago, and now, and earlier this week, it was over 88. It gained 11% of its in purchasing power in a period of 6 months. All right? That is deflation. No one, to my knowledge, is making a serious effort to stop it. If they allow it to continue, they're going to collapse this economy. They're going to force the government to admit it can't pay the national debt. I can't understand how people are doing this by accident. It looks to me that this is bizarre and irrational as it seems. It appears to me that they are intentionally enforcing deflation, and if they are, they're intentionally pushing us into a greater depression. That's the implication. I don't know that it's true, but things are spiraling out of control. October was an extraordinary month. We had the stock market. It seems like 6 months ago wasn't. It was just last month. The Dow Jones average went from above 17,000 to below 16,000. Everybody thought, oh my gosh, it's the beginning of the end. And then the plunge protection team jumped in and pushed it back up over 17,000. About the same time that's happening, we see the price of gold take catastrophic falls. All right? A catastrophic decline, seemingly. And the at the same time we see that, we see the dollar deflating dramatically. This is evidence of a system that is out of control. This is evidence of a level of volatility that I doubt many of you have seen before in all your life. Maybe you go back to 2008, there might have been comparable volatility there at the onset of the Great Recession, maybe. But it's hard to remember seeing this much volatility in so little a period of time. How can we sustain this amount of volatility and expect this economy to hold together? We've got stocks going down, stocks going up, gold going down, for deflated dollars going up. And not a little bit, a lot. Something is going on here. It's like he says, things really are spiraling out of control. And all by itself, what do you do when things are going out of control? It's time to get hold of that life preserver. Time to make access to the lifeboat. We can imagine, if only from the volatility we're facing right now. Right? We may not be able to explain that volatility, but we can see it. Right? It's like the ship is listing. Right? The ship is, I don't know why it's listing 30 degrees to the right or to starboard or whatever. I don't know why it's happening, but it is happening. It's not a good sign. It does suggest now is the time to get your life preserver. Something is happening. Schechtman, he goes on, he says, you are going to have to take a stand. It's not easy. There isn't any middle ground. You will be either right or wrong. I agree with him. We aren't going to just be able to make investments because, gee, this feels good. Right now, you are investing in a life preserver or you're not investing in a life preserver, but you're going to make a choice. You're going to make a stand. And maybe you guess right and maybe you guess wrong, but if you guess wrong, you are going to be in significant trouble. And I don't know anybody that can tell you exactly what you need right now. But you do need to make decisions. You've got to make up your mind because you and your family, your home, even your survival is going to depend on some of the decisions you make in the next little while. We've got a caller. It's David from Indiana is on the phone. David, what you got for us?
Well, just, with the currencies based against the other currencies and everyone's printing them up, the commodity prices, 10 years ago, we had $25 hogs. We got $75, $80 hogs now. Same with cattle. It became so expensive that they were selling off their heifers and young calves to because they couldn't afford to feed them. Just because the dollar has, I'm sure whether it's inflation or deflation, there's a lot of wealth changing hands, and it's all going upward. It's not
going to the ordinary people, that's for sure. It's not going to ordinary people, that's for sure.
Yeah, I can no longer hear you here. Well, if you got the money in a deflationary period, that's fine. But if you got to pay off your debts with, deflationary dollars, you're in big trouble. You're going to lose your property. You're going to lose your industry. And the same is true with inflation. Like with the Germans, they ended up so much money back during the war that, you take a wheelbarrow full of money and buy a loaf of bread,
That was inflation, though, hyperinflation, right?
Yeah,
and one thing about it, you could still function. Inflation will not necessarily kill your economy, at least not instantly, immediately. You can function. They did it in Zimbabwe. They did inflation was 2,500% a month, right? They could deal with that. You just add a few more zeros and you're still in business. Deflation is an entirely different animal. It's exactly opposite from inflation, but you get caught in deflation, people won't spend. Point one, because they know whatever the dollar will be worth more tomorrow than it is today, therefore I won't buy today. I'll wait until tomorrow and I get a better deal. The people who want to borrow money to go out and build a new business or expand an existing business or buy a car, they say, forget that, because I know that in this period of deflation, if I borrow today, I'll be paying back more tomorrow. It absolutely crushes your economy.
It is a spiral that once started is very difficult to get out of. The last time we had a Great Depression, it's arguable the only reason we got out of it was because we went into World War II. Some people make that argument. I'm not saying it's true, but you know what I'm talking about, I believe, David. True?
Yeah, I can see that on, you know, on a middle class or a lower class. But, you know, in a global economy that international funds trade, and if you don't like a deflationary dollar, you could go to a yen or a yuan or a ruble. You know, that basket of commodities, the produce that industry produces, can use a different exchange rate where the locals are stuck with what they got.
That's right. And it's especially the American export industry is in big trouble because as the dollar becomes more valuable, their products become less competitive on the international market. If Japan inflates the yen, okay, the Japanese have an advantage. They can sell their products essentially at lower prices than the Americans can. And if we're not inflating, if our government's not inflating the dollar, American competitors have only one choice, and that is to cut prices. All right? They have to actually cut prices, which means less profits. It means less revenue. It means less taxes paid to the government. This will happen, and it means these American export industries will be put under enormous pressure if deflation is allowed to continue. And I'm reading the U.S. dollar index from the perspective that if Europe inflates the euro and Japan is inflating the yen, we have a teeter-totter effect. As they are becoming less valuable, the dollar must become more valuable, and that means U.S. can't sell as much. Less jobs, less revenue. You know,
one of the objectives of this is just put a downward pressure on wages in this country?
I'm looking at this, and I'm telling you that I'm bewildered. I was reading from an article by David Sheckman, and part of the article says the central banks will not, cannot allow deflation to take hold because of the massive amount of debt and leverage in the markets, especially the bond markets. He thinks that deflation is impossible. He's got another one. I have never believed that deflation here, meaning in the United States, is possible. I don't agree with that. I think it is possible, and if we can judge by what we see, what we've seen over the last 6 months or so, deflation is not merely possible, it's taking place. I don't mean that it's predominant yet, but it's increasing its challenge to inflation. Maybe we are still in an era of small inflation, all right, generally. But deflation is growing, and it's contrary to the best interest of this economy, contrary to the best interest of the government, and nobody's trying to stop it. And that makes me wonder, are they intentionally getting ready to pull the plug?
Yeah, we may be marching a lot faster than we think to this new world order.
I think you're right.
Banned.
I mean, we'd better see, I'm going to have to see, some serious and rapid changes coming out of the Federal Reserve and the United States government. And I mean, I need to see them before the end of this year. I need to see them in the next 6-8 weeks. If I don't see that, I have to, I cannot understand this. You know, I just can't understand it except as evidence that they want a collapse. They finally just said, all right, fine, we can't fight this anymore. Pull the plug. So we'll watch and see. David, we have to thank you for your call. Melody and I are out of time here on Financial Survival. We'll be back on Monday. Hope you folks will tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.